Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About.
Meet Molly Bang, and picture a red triangle at the genesis of every story. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 311 of the podcast with Molly Bang. I'm so excited to get to this conversation, but first I wanted to stop and take a moment to thank those people that are leaving messages on iTunes. I read everything. I'm moved by your kind words, and I'd be honored to share them with everyone else today. Two recent reviews I received I want to share. One was from KimDub35, and it reads, "Matthew continues to put out such an informative, engaging podcast. The sound quality is consistently good, and the caliber of the interviews is excellent." Thank you, Kim. "I really enjoy hearing from authors or illustrators of books I've read, and this podcast has helped me find some gems I wouldn't have otherwise. It's always fun to get more of the author's personality. On the Robert Sabuda episode, I learned it takes over 1,000 people to make one of his pop-up books." Amazing. That is amazing, right, Kim? I mean, it's amazing what these people share. And I'm so glad that you're listening and you're taking things away from it as well. Thank you for sharing. The second is from Erica Victor. She's a friend of mine from Twitter. It made me so happy to see her name. She wrote, "I love that you record this in your library office. I love that you talk to everyone I want to talk to in the kidlit world. You help my students in Kuala Lumpur get their hands on the best books around. Spoiler alert, I buy a lot of books." Erica, you're amazing, and I admire and respect and love and applaud you for working with children halfway across the globe. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for sharing it with others. I'm going to send these people and more people some All the Wonders buttons for writing a review, and I'd love to share one with you. All you need to do is go on to iTunes and post a comment or rate the podcast, and then email me at here@allthewonders.com and let me know. Include your mailing address, and I'll send a button anywhere within the U.S. And if you don't live in the U.S., email me. I'll send you a personalized video message or something rad. All right, it's time for today's awesomeness. Picture book author and illustrator Molly Bang joins me today to talk about anniversaries and energy. And every moment is full of inescapable wonder for me. Her book, Picture This, How Pictures Work, was published 25 years ago, and no one at the time knew quite what to do with it. It has since become one of the most valued and revered works on how we read pictures. This book, for you, will be very, very special. If you are not making visual art, this book will fascinate you at the way we read pictures, and specifically how each choice an artist makes can impact how we perceive or read the work. Amazing, amazing stuff. Here is episode number 311 of the podcast with Molly Bang. Welcome to the podcast, Molly Bang. I'm so excited to get to talk to you. I have so many questions. I can't wait to jump in.
Oh, good. Question away.
Question away. So you, the lovely people at Chronicle, have reissued, you have revised, expanded, but have reissued your Picture This, How Pictures Work. 25th anniversary. Congratulations on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It was one that upon holding it, when Chronicle had sent me a copy, I hadn't realized that the book has been around as long as it has, playing the influence that it has. It immediately reminded me of Jim Trelease in his Read Aloud handbook.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So I bring that up because when I shared it with one of my friends, she said, oh, yeah, I actually use that book with my elementary school students in the library when we study picture books for our mock Caldecott, for different things like that, when we talk about why different picture books work as well as they do with us. And I thought, oh my word, this is a whole new way to look at things. And it brought me into reading your book again from a different light. And I just want to tell you how beautiful I think your work is and how important it is and how resonant. And that I'm just grateful that you created it for all of us to see and to make picture books better.
Well, thanks. It has a very strange history because as I said in the introduction to the book, I was doing children's books for a while, illustrating children's books for a while. And then a friend of mine who really knows art, thinks about art a lot, said, why don't you draw some pictures of not just one or two objects, but in the house? Why don't you draw like a scene? And I did several things like that. And then he said, wow, you really don't quite understand how pictures work, do you? and I knew he was right in some really basic way. And so I thought, okay, I'll try to figure this out. And so I went to the museum a lot and looked at pictures. I read books about the psychology of art. I read art critics and stuff. And I realized that the only way that I could really understand it was to try to teach it in the simplest way possible. And so I started teaching it to my daughter's third grade class. And I knew they loved stories, and I knew that the easiest way to work with them would be a story. And so I started making cutouts to show how Little Red Riding Hood and the Wolf would work. And they responded to it. They made some pictures of their own using the cutout sort of things that I had done. But they really didn't like it because third graders are really interested in reality. Yes. And they want to be able to draw pictures with pencils. They want to make things that look real.
Yeah.
And so I went back home, though, because I knew that I was starting to understand something. So then I played a whole bunch more with variations of Little Red Riding Hood pictures, and that's how the whole business started of how I made Picture This. So I made it out of all these colored pieces. Well, four colors, black, white, purple, and a pale purple and red, because I wanted to go through an emotional gamut, because black is the darkest of our feelings and white is the brightest of our feelings. And then red is this strong, vibrant color. Mm-hmm. And purple is kind of a variant of red, but it's soft. And so using those four, then I started building pictures from Little Red Riding Hood. And then I said, why do they work this way? And then I got the principles from that. But then nobody would publish the book. I took it to all sorts of people, and they said, you know, this isn't a children's book. It's not an adult's book. I'm a children's book writer, illustrator, and therefore normal art publishers were not interested in me. I had no cred outside of children's books, and it wasn't a children's book. So finally, somebody named an editor named Lindsay Begahold at Little Brown said, okay, we'll publish it. And she published it, but nobody quite knew what to do with it. And I think it sort of limped along, because I certainly didn't seem to have sold very many copies. But then Little Brown was sold to some other company. So then an editor at North South Books got it.
Yeah.
And North South Books made a lovely tote. They said, this is a really good book. We need to change the way it looks completely. So they changed the way it looked completely. They made a different cover, a different size, they put big borders around it, and they sold it that way. But then it was complicated. Then North South fell apart as a publishing company, and it was bought by Chronicle. Chronicle sold it the way it was for quite a few years. I had no idea who was buying it or who wasn't buying it. No idea. Once in a while, I'd get some.
Because it looks like it's not for children, so you're not getting, like, librarians saying, oh, I love Picture This. Can you come to a school visit?
Exactly. Exactly. No, and then I didn't think many copies of it were being sold. And then suddenly I got orders for, like, I got a whole bunch of emails saying, please send me Picture This. This is the best. I was told this was the best photography book that there is. And I thought, best book for understanding photography?
Yes.
So it happened to be that this guy who is a Nikon camera expert has a blog, and the blog is very popular. And he said, if there's one book that you want to get to understand photography, get Picture This by Molly Bang. And so all of these orders came in. But the company had not printed enough of the paper-bound books, so there weren't any copies available. But there had been a whole bunch of hardback books that they didn't want to sell anymore, and I had bought them. So I had about 300 copies in my garage. So
these photographers were ordering them from you.
Yes, they were ordering them directly from me. So then I sold almost all of the ones that were in the garage. And then, so this was before Chronicle got it. Then Chronicle got it and was publishing it. And then suddenly 25 years had gone by. I still had no idea who was buying it. I still don't know who was buying it. But every once in a while, I would get somebody saying, oh, I really like your book. I'm giving a workshop on cloth design or on just the most bizarre, different sorts of things. And I would say, oh, okay, they're doing cloth design. I'm glad they like Picture This. But then when Chronicle redid it, they did yet a totally different version of it. And it was much bigger. It was very minimalist and much more of an art-looking book. Like, now I've graduated to be a person who understands graphic art. And so now museums are actually buying it, which they didn't before.
It wasn't the right layout for them. It wasn't the right whatever. It didn't connect.
Exactly. Exactly. Isn't that interesting?
It's totally. I mean, it seems like, I mean, this is a book. This is for people that haven't seen it yet. This is like the Bible of visual literacy. I mean, the way that you're there's so much there that, well, you even mentioned the person that you went back and forth on in the introduction. I hadn't realized this was actually a where is the name of his job? That it was like not that he was a the psychology dean of psychology of art. Psychology
yes.
of art. That
yes.
to me, I think nails it, because it's so much about when we look at art, when we can deduce it to shapes and feelings and colors and how we respond that way. That's what the heart of this is. So of course then photography, textiles, anything like that, it all makes sense, because it's about how we read things visually.
Yes. And I've also gotten responses from theater directors and from sculptors. So it's how we look at anything visual. And yes, Rudolf Arnheim was an extraordinary help. He was the person who brought the psychology of art to the fore. He was an extraordinarily knowledgeable person, originally Austrian, and came to the United States. And I sent an early copy that I'd made to him, and he looked at it and he said, you know, this is really interesting, but I have something to say about every page. And I said, and can I scribble on it? And I said, scribble away, yes. And so he made comments on almost every single page that I incorporated into the original. He was really a huge help.
Wow, that's...
Yeah. And I think that's something that children don't know, which is that people really can be helpful. That if you ask somebody for suggestions about a work that you're doing, I've gotten consistently over the years people to say, you know, this picture doesn't work because of this, or this really works here, but this doesn't. Both editors and total strangers, like I didn't know Rudolf Arnheim, are extraordinary helpers.
I think both the marriage of the people willing to tell you what isn't working, in addition to you being willing to listen.
But I think that that's part of being an artist or a writer.
It is, isn't it?
Is that, yeah, that you need to be open to hearing what people have to say. You're not going to always agree with it, but you really need to listen to people. Your pictures are not, a lot of times you're not getting across what you think you're getting across in a picture or a piece of writing. And to have somebody say, this isn't getting across and this is why, is just it's wonderful.
I think that having gone through some of this myself, being a writer myself, the process, I mean, I'm so young in writing that I've had to go through the feeling of like, oh, when I write, it isn't just for me, or it isn't just a solitary process.
Yes.
There are moments, but there are also moments when part of what makes it work is having so many hands that know your writing and know the kind of story you're trying to tell. I mean, as you're saying, that help you to see your vision more clearly, if that even makes sense. It almost seems counterintuitive that somebody else can help you see a vision more clearly, but they can.
And I think that when kids get their essays back in school, or any kind of writing, their stories, and the teacher says, you know, you could do this or you could do that, then the kids often feel like, oh, I made a mistake, or I didn't do it right, or I liked it the way it was, I don't want to change it. I think that they don't understand that that's what all of us go through, even when we are well-known writers or well-known picture makers.
Well, and I wonder too, being from the classroom, if part of that is that teachers don't come from writing, they come from teaching. So they're used to saying, this is what's wrong, let's fix it. But I don't know how many other teachers, and I say this looking at my own flaws, when I started out teaching, I felt like I was good at nurturing ideas with students, but I certainly now am able to lend so much more, saying that this is a process that we're going to go through, and it's not just you're going to turn it in and I'm going to mark your grammar and then you're going to make a final draft and then we're done.
Right. And then also having the kids read it to each other.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I did with second, third, and fourth graders that I loved doing was that they would make pictures, and then we would spread them out on the floor, and we'd pick out two or three pictures that we really liked and talk about what we liked in them. And then kids started talking about what they really enjoyed. And I said, what can you take from each of these pictures that you think is wonderful? And then they started looking at each other's pictures and asking each other for help and trying to make their pictures more wonderful. And I backed off more and more and said, okay, you guys talk with each other, tell each other what you're trying to do, and then listen to what your classmates say back to you. And to have kids help each other is just wonderful.
Oh, yeah, that's the beauty right there. For you to reach that place where you can just back away and allow them. I mean, you created that community, Molly, that they knew that it was a safe environment, that they each had a voice and that their perspective mattered, and you nurtured that so that you were able to witness that. Those are beautiful moments.
Yeah. We're lucky when we can do it.
Yeah. I try to whenever that happens, and hopefully every teacher has those moments too. You try not to be so stuck in what you're doing, but allow yourself to step back and see it and really witness the beautiful thing that happens with these children.
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
Well, I can't wait to start using this with my students in that same way. I was so excited to hear that. I love that that your whole voice in Picture This really is us exploring alongside you. It feels like, for me to put it into, you know, my background, it feels like you're teaching us or you're talking through your idea with us. Like we would say you're thinking aloud. And I like that. It feels intimate and it feels safe and it doesn't feel critical.
Good.
Yeah, but more coming from a place of, like you were saying, when you are in that good place of critique with others, that you can hear it, that I want to help you make your stuff stronger. Let's talk about why this works, not let's talk about why your work was horrible.
Exactly, right, yes.
Although I love the quote that the person you were working with said, I don't think you understand pictures, or however you said
that. Yeah, he was right. Now, what grade do you teach?
So I taught fourth grade for some time, and now I teach K-5 library media. So I see them every week.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because I found that Picture This works the best once the hormones get really charged.
So that
it works best for kids who are really getting powerful emotions. And so I've found that fifth and sixth graders can do it, but the ones who get totally charged are the seventh, eighth, and ninth. They start making really, really powerful pictures.
Oh, that's great. See, that makes me think too, like whenever we're doing these Skype connections, when we're connecting these two classes, it's fun to be able to connect some of our younger grades with middle school and high schools that are local or wherever, but to be able to talk story and then say, now wait, I have a book to recommend to you.
Right.
It's sort of fun. I like that.
Good.
Hey, but speaking of stuff that works for elementary, you've had this presence in our library for some time, and I think in many's, most recently with the stuff that you've been doing with light, with sunlight, with the earth. I know that you have a new book coming out, Rivers of Sunlight, How the Sun Moves Water Around the Earth. And I'd love if we could for a moment to talk about that. I've known your work. I think we've incorporated your work, maybe many of us have too, just in how much education is circling back to environmental education and how many of us are working to earn green school certification and maintain it. There's really, I think, a stewardship that's going on in our education toward how we care for this earth and one another. That is a beautiful thing. And your books, at least in my neck of the woods, are a part of that conversation.
Oh, I'm very happy to hear that. What happened is that a close friend of mine, a very close friend, is Penny Chisholm. And she's a teacher of biology, professor of biology at MIT. And she has wanted for years to reach out and explain science to kids. And I have a whole science background, but my science background is like polka dots on a cloth. in that I have these factoids that don't connect with each other. And Penny is a really systemic thinker. She thinks only in terms of systems and how everything works together. So, first of all, when we decided to do the Sunlight series, and we call it the Sunlight series now because it's all about how sunlight affects life on Earth, except for My Light, which was a book that I did off on my own before the other ones. But that was only after loads of conversations with Penny. So what happened is I wanted to do something about sun and how sunlight affects us, and I wanted it to be somewhat mythological or really in a grand, mythological sense. And so I was trying to think of who could be speaking. Was it the sun a male or a female? Was the earth a male or a female? Were they talking to each other? Were they having a conversation? Was somebody noticing their conversation? And I kept going round and round and trying to figure out all of this. And then suddenly I said, no, I am the sun. And then once I had that, everything much more fell into place. And the other idea that I had that made it different was that I knew light. We understand light both as these little packets of energy and also as waves. And so I made light be waves of little polka dots, which took a huge amount of time making those. And the thing is, you see them as individual yellow polka dots. They're not individual yellow polka dots. What happened is that if you put yellow on dark blue, it turns like a sort of a sickly greenish yellow. And so I had to make all the polka dots first white, and then on top of the white, I had to paint yellow polka dots.
Oh no, to know that. So,
yes.
Oh boy.
So it was my form of meditation for many, many, many hours. But Penny, in every single book, I learned something totally new. I did not know that all of the CO2 that makes up our bodies comes from plants breathing. I did not know that. I did not know that all of the life in the ocean is completely dependent on this these basically they're invisible except through microscopes, plants that live on the sunlit surface of the sea, sort of like within an inch of the surface of the sea. All of the life in the ocean is dependent on those, and half of the oxygen we breathe is dependent on those. So they're those phytoplankton.
It's so amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
It's just amazing. I mean, that's what I get out of your books, too. It's just that feeling, like when you're talking in that voice in your books to the readers, the feeling of, like, can you believe that this is real? Like, we live on this miracle of a planet that makes
exactly.
all this possible.
I think the thing that really annoys me is that should be basic knowledge. I should have known that, and I didn't. And I figure if I, who have a background in science, both of my parents were scientists, if I didn't know things this basic, 90% of the population in the country doesn't know it. And this is the most basic possible science. So I'm frustrated by that, and both Penny and I feel it's really important for kids to know this. Hopefully people are going to be reading the Sunlight series books and finding it out. The other thing about the rivers of sunlight that I had no idea, I didn't know that there's a river of vapor in the sky, the flying river of water in the sky that carries vapor from the carries fresh water vapor from the sea over land. I didn't know that when salt water evaporates, it doesn't, that none of the salt goes up into the sky, that all the salt stays in the sea and only the fresh water rises in the sky. I didn't know that. The same thing happens when ice forms. I didn't know that ice brings fresh water out of the sea and leaves the salt in the sea. And most of all, I didn't know that there was this current that goes way deep down in the sea and flows all over the earth in these strange meandering paths.
Yes.
That carries oxygen down and then carries cold water down and pops up and then pops up and flows along the surface of the sea as warm water. I mean, I had no idea of any of that.
These invisible forces are so much bigger than us and a lot of times are invisible to us. So
yes,
we take them for granted. But I think the same thing, to know what an air current is, to know how water and just the whole process of how everything gets churned up, how everything gets to us, how we are part of everything.
Yes.
I feel like what you've done consistently in your books is that you take your time and you allow the ideas to really sink in. And I think that actually is conveyed as well in your illustration. Those tiny, tiny points of paint that you have there, there's something to it that causes you to slow down, that causes you to not rush through the book. There's just something suspended in the air in that way. Just sort of like, I have my hands raised right now talking to you, my fingers up as points, just kind of saying, wait, just slow down. Let's let this sink in a little bit.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. I'm very happy. Thank you.
So when you sit down with Penny, are you... I feel like if I'm putting myself in your shoes, I'd sit down and go, okay, Penny, what new thing are you going to teach me today? how are these... Are you plotting out what books to go next because of these questions, these conversations that you're having with her?
Yes. She is... has often been astounded at my ignorance. I'm sort of. And so what'll happen is that she says that we'll both figure out a topic like photosynthesis.
Yes.
And she'll tell me things about it. And then she'll write like an outline. And I'll try to put that into lay language and then she will get back and tell me everything I got wrong. And then we go back and forth and back and forth. And finally we come up with a bunch of words that we like. And then I do the pictures. And again, I'll get stuff wrong in the pictures. And she will say, no, that's not how chlorophyll would be appropriately represented. Or that's not how sunlight does to the chlorophyll. And so I have to change the pictures. And then we have to change the words because sometimes the pictures replace the words so we don't need as many words and we can get rid of them. Or sometimes we need more words to slightly explain better what the pictures are saying. So it's back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to such a degree that by the end of Rivers, I think we had over 200 changes. I mean, what do you call it? Different
revisions,
versions of the book.
Yeah.
Revisions,
yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's another one of those things to show children that when we write, when we collaborate, when we work together, it takes time. It's not one or two passes. You want to get it right when you share your work, when you publish your work.
Yeah, yeah. You want it to be the best you can make it.
I love the idea, though, of you laboring and then Penny just going, "That Molly, that's not what photosynthesis looks like."
Exactly. Yes. Or it's not. It doesn't fit the concept that we have of it. And
go.
Also, Molly, you totally misunderstood what I just told you. Yes. Yes.
Well, lifelong learning and being open to hearing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that yes. also, I mean, so, because you have the responsibility then of communicating it to your readers. So I think that it, in a way, it sort of mirrors things nicely that you have Penny working with you and you being able to go back and forth and to perhaps be a little yeah. ignorant to serve the purpose a little bit better.
Oh, yeah, it is. And the other thing is that Penny has gotten better and better at the writing and at thinking about the pictures, so that the communication at the outset was extraordinarily difficult because she doesn't say things or write things until she's absolutely sure of them. And I throw stuff out all the time as a way of getting feedback, thinking that I'm right, but I don't care that much if I'm not right. She lives in a world in which you have to have corroboration for everything you say as a scientist, because
yes.
science only works by people saying, wait a second, how do you prove that? And in making books and pictures and writing, you don't have to prove things. In science, you have to prove that what you're saying is based on as many really, really good results of really good experiments.
Well, clearly her National Medal of Science is serving her well.
Yes, yes.
to read her description in the back of the book and to just know that, like, here is a very, very smart person who
yes.
is working to respect and honor our young readers.
Exactly.
Who are our future yeah. scientists and who have
yes.
big questions. Even if they're not future scientists, they are people that will question the world and seek understanding. So
yes.
it's a good thing you two have going. Molly, thank you so much for sitting down to talk to me tonight. Time has flown by and I feel like I've learned so much from you.
Oh, Matthew, thank you. It's really been a delight to talk to you. I've really enjoyed it.
Wonderful. Well, listen, I'm going to see A Library Full of Children tomorrow morning. Just to close things out, I'd love to know what message you'd like for me to bring to them from you.
I think the most important thing that I could suggest to children is to explore and explore and explore and to be kind.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Philip C. Stead returns, and we talk about Samson in the Snow. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts.
That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.